This is an ABC podcast.
For copyright reasons, the music has been edited. To hear the full tracks, listen to The J-Files, Thursday nights on Double J, or head to doublej.net.au and click on the track list at the bottom of each episode.
Kaz Tran here. Welcome to The J-Files, the podcast for people who love music. Each episode is like a quick music history lesson. We pick a different artist or band, we look at some of the most important moments in their career, and we celebrate their impact on music, all in less than 30 minutes. On this episode, it's the sensual voice and smooth harmonies of American singer, songwriter, multi-instrumentalist, and producer D'Angelo. Born and raised in Richmond, Virginia, Michael Archer, aka D'Angelo, had a very religious upbringing. His father and grandfather were both Pentecostal ministers, but music turned out to be all the church D'Angelo needed. Learning piano, singing, and then writing his own songs in his teens, he'd win talent contests with his group, Michael Archer and Precise. In high school, he joined a rap group called IDU, which stood for Intelligent, Deadly, but Unique. The group didn't get far, but record labels saw something in the production of their tracks, which were largely handled by D'Angelo. At 18, he moved to New York, and from there he teamed up with supergroup Black Men United. It was a collective of African-American R&B and soul artists that included Lenny Kravitz, Usher, Boyz II Men, and more. D'Angelo co-wrote and co-produced the track You Will Know for the Jason's Lyrics soundtrack in 1994. It was a song that set up a lot of anticipation for D'Angelo's debut album, Brown Sugar, a record which he wrote and demoed almost entirely by himself in his bedroom. To take us through the impact of D'Angelo's career, we've enlisted the help of hefty musical brain and D'Angelo superfan, Hao Latugefu. Hao presents Sky High on Double J and The Hip Hop Show on Triple J. Hao says when D'Angelo released Brown Sugar, the album shook things up instantly and profoundly.
I mean, even aesthetically, I think 1995 when he dropped Brown Sugar, his debut album, the music around that time, a lot of it was hip hop, and it was a lot of it was kind of like Bad Boy era, you know, Biggie and Puff Daddy and Mace, and even R&B was a bit more kind of synthesizer, drum machine, samples driven. But when D'Angelo came out, he stuck out like a sore thumb because it was all live instrumentation, very kind of organic. Even his look, he single-handedly brought back cornrows. You know what I mean? Like, no one was like, you know, obviously that was a kind of 70s, 60s. You know, it wasn't a 90s thing. You know,
right.
The cornrows, it was kind of like old hairstyle, but that was him too. It was he was still super young, but a very old soul, like 60s, 70s R&B soul. And he came through with a leather jacket and the cornrows, and music was soulful, it was sensual, and just the writing as well, and the harmonies. And you could tell that he was a big fan of Prince.
Oh, yes. You know, the vocal delivery.
Yeah, yeah, like the falsettos and the arrangements and the harmonies and the ad-libs and all of that. But it was in his way.
Mm.
So he was like that generation's Prince. And you know, we all know with Prince how influential he was.
Yes.
And he was like a product of Prince and that generation's savior for R&B and soul. And good music just lasts forever.
Mm.
And artists of today are influenced by him even indirectly, because they're influenced by someone that was influenced by D'Angelo.
Yeah, yeah, the knock-on effect.
Yeah.
Mm. For Brown Sugar, you're talking about him being, you know, quite young, you know, making this album, but being an old soul. He had a lot of extremely high-caliber artists around him, didn't he?
Yeah.
Like, you know, he was able to attract these people who, you know, have incredible reputations as musicians.
Yeah, he did, you know, and I think it was because of that. He was an old soul, very talented old soul. And, you know, I've listened to podcasts and where Questlove has talked about, you know, the genius that is D'Angelo. You know, obviously with, you know, being a genius, there are the kind of balancing factors where, you know, you don't turn up, or you turn up super late, or you take 10,000 years to finish something.
Yeah.
But he was a genius, you know, and people like Questlove of the Roots speak highly of him, has worked with him closely on Voodoo and around the Brown era. Even when I saw the Brown Sugar video, Ali Shaheed Muhammad of A Tribe Called Quest was in his band in the video. I was like, what? Why is he in the video? And I think Raphael Sadiq was hanging around him. And yeah, I think just when you have that infectious aura around you, like... Like the saying goes in hip-hop, real recognize real. You know, like people gravitate towards each other because they do appreciate their energy and their musicianship. And yeah, D'Angelo was that guy. He was the guy that would jump on every instrument and play every instrument well, just like Prince, you know. And I think there are some samples in there, like some drums and things like that. Me being a hip-hop head, I was always like, oh, no, I know these drums, I know these loops. But everything else was live instrumentation.
Amazing.
And he had his hand in everything. And, yeah, like Questlove was saying, he's just a perfectionist and would only want to record on tape, because that's what his idols would record on, and he wanted that certain sound and aesthetic to the music that he was making. So he was very adamant in kind of following in the footsteps of those that came before him.
Right. What's the key song from Brown Sugar where, you know, that, I mean, it's a classic record, but I mean, you know,
yeah,
is there a song,
bottom,
yeah, that people can get the essence of what he was aiming for?
Yeah, I think you can't go past. I mean, I really love Lady, the song Lady. Mm. I think just musically it's just beautiful and it's kind of uplifting, and I think it's the more up-tempo song of the album. But, you know, you can't go past the title track, Brown Sugar. You know, that is the way it comes in with the, I think it's a Rhodes piano or something, and the bass. And it's like, man, you just knew that it was something different. It was a change in R&B and soul of the mid-90s. And, yeah, Brown Sugar is the one. You know, I mean, he's a... one of those tortured soul artists, you know. So I think whatever he puts out, he's never going to be
totally happy with it.
Totally happy with it. But, you know, like Brown Sugar is a bona fide classic, you know, that changed the game.
Right. How did it do for him? It went up the charts?
Yeah, charted. I think I read it was like 2 million sold.
Oof.
So, you know, like for a debut album, it's wild.
Yeah, that is.
And
crazy.
That type of music too. I mean, obviously it's a different era with before streaming and everything, but still, to sell that many on your first album and relatively unknown, you know, it's crazy. Oh, sugar, when you're close to me, you love me right down to my knees, and whenever you let me hit it, sweet like honey when it comes to me.
Brown Sugar was the work of a fully formed artist and is attributed by many as the birth of neo soul. The album had a stack of esteemed collaborators like Rafael Sadiq and A Tribe Called Quest's Ali Shaheed Muhammad. But most of the album credits belong to D'Angelo for vocals, vocal arrangements and production, as well as playing a lot of the instruments too. D'Angelo's success with the record led to a two-year tour for Brown Sugar, which left him exhausted and also frustrated by writer's block. He took a break, had a son with then-partner Angie Stone, and released covers, remixes, and a live album to keep fans happy. 5 years after Brown Sugar, D'Angelo finally released his second album, Voodoo. It went to number one on the charts in America and took home two Grammy Awards. It catapulted D'Angelo's fame to a whole new level. But as Howe explains, that celebrity status led to some troubling times.
When he came back out with Untitled.
The video.
That video, you know, he was all like ripped and buff and looking good. So, you know, apparently I read an article that all he used to do was, you know, like, outside of music was smoke weed and hit the gym.
Yeah.
So, you know, he came out looking like the sex symbol.
Right.
Which, you know, I read later he hated because that's all he started to become known as. And he'd be performing at shows and women would be telling him to take his shirt off. And he'd be like, ah, I'm actually here to perform music.
My music, yeah.
Yeah, you know.
It's not a Chippendale show.
Yeah, and apparently it did really mess with him and, you know, turn to substances and that's, I think, the next album was 7 years.
Yeah.
So, yeah, a lot of ups and downs. I think, you know, brushes with the law and, you know, just getting his mind, body and soul right before hitting us up seven years later. Even before that, you knew he was a handsome man and he was an incredible singer, musician. Like, he already had it locked
before
showing off his body.
Yeah, but the songs from Brown Sugar, you listen to the way, you know, they are very sexual feeling songs and sensual. And his falsetto is just like, you know, you can imagine the sweat on his skin.
Yeah, you know, making a lot of knees weak.
Yes, he generates a lot of that sexual energy on that album. So, you know, he was kind of taking it to the next level with that song and the video, right?
Yeah, definitely. I think, I mean, outside of the sexiness of it, it's an incredible song. And it sounds, I mean, that's probably his most Prince moment too, you know, that song.
Mm.
But yeah, just everything was working for him for that song. The video was amazing. The song was amazing. And Voodoo is, I think, my top 10 albums of all time. To this day, I play that album.
So how did he change things up for the album that came after, you know, one of your top 10 of all time, as you mentioned, Hal? What was the leap from Brown Sugar to Voodoo?
It was darker and it was grittier. It sounded like he... You know, a lot of experimentation he probably took place before leading into that, and it just felt like he had found his groove. And also, I think he recorded that Electric Lady Studios, and at that time, he was in one studio, then Erykah Badu was recording Mama's Gun in another studio, Common was recording like Water for Chocolate in another studio, and I think there was someone else in another studio.
Yeah.
So all of that was happening in that moment. So they were capturing a lot of great energy. I think Dilla was floating around between studios as well. Most Def, you know, and everyone is exchanging energy and ideas, and it was just the perfect storm for all those albums. And those albums for those artists have probably their best as well.
Yeah.
So they just really captured that energy, that what was going on in that building.
Yeah, it was a time, you know, and a moment, you know, a moment in time to hear him describe it. There's a group called the Soulquarians who keeps coming up.
Soulquarians. Yeah. So that's them. Collectively is D'Angelo, Questlove, Dilla, I think Music Soul Charm may have been in there. So it's just a collective of those kind of artists. You know, apparently, like, everyone didn't like the neo soul title people gave it. You know, it was just soul music. But I guess we kind of needed something to call that, that movement, you know, and it was kind of like neo soul. But yeah, just like you said, a moment in time where everything just, the planets aligned on, you know, those years of them being creative, you know, and it just gave us this beautiful music that we still listen to, you know, in 2022.
Yeah. Artists do hate labels, but but I don't think what he was making, it did sound like a new type of soul, the way he was arranging and blending, you know, styles and genres. It didn't sound like the traditional soul that...
No, and still incorporating, like, sampling as well. So it was a very cutting-edge version of the soul music that you would hear in the 70s.
You heard Hal mention Musical Collective, the Soulquarians, who rallied around D'Angelo and the Electric Lady Studios at the time of Voodoo's making. People like Common and Erykah Badu, DJ Premier, Pino Palladino and Roy Hargrove, all under one roof, innovating and inspiring each other's work. Hal says there was another essential member of the Soulquarian crew who had a major impact on the cruisy, laid-back feel of D'Angelo's music, one James Yancey, otherwise known as Jay Dilla.
D'Angelo and Dilla, you know, like that kind of just slightly behind the beat swing.
Yes.
Which, you know, is kind of easy if you're sampling drums because you can just shift and move things on, you know, but when you're actually playing like that, it's quite incredible. And, you know, for Questlove to kind of incorporate that into his style of drum after, especially, you know, drumming for so many years of just being right on point, you know, it's quite incredible.
Yeah, and the expectation of that, I mean, because D'Angelo, and you're saying, you know, Dilla as well, you know, they were the ones who really changed people's thinking on that.
Yeah, definitely. You know, that once-in-a-lifetime artists, you know, and unfortunately Dilla's not with us anymore, but he's, you know, his legacy is still very much intact and very much heavily revered, and so is D'Angelo. They're the type of artists, if you're making soulful hip-hop or soul music or even R&B music, all roads lead to those two.
Those two.
You know? Especially if you're a male vocalist, D'Angelo is part of your DNA, your fabric at some point.
Yeah.
You know, as much as we could say Prince is or Stevie Wonder or Donny Hathaway, you know, they're part of that legacy. And then forever, they will be there on the family tree of black music that you'll find D'Angelo and Dilla in there somewhere. And Questlove as well.
I mean, he's one with a very clear artistic kind of idea. You know, every album is a statement with intention. Is there a social and cultural statement that he makes with these albums as well? And what is it to you? Because, you know, even if you look at the titles, you know, they all mean something. They're not randomly, you know. I mean, words aren't random, you know, to an artist. Yeah. But, you know, he has... very pointed intention with, you know, the titles that he chooses.
Yeah, especially with, you know, the last album, Black Messiah, and the artwork on that, you know, it's very kind of socially conscious. And I think he always has been, subtly, you know, he's not like, in the same as, you know, same as Erykah Badu and a lot of the artists moving in a similar lane, you know, they're always speaking to, the culture and the music of blackness, and it's not always right in your face, but it's subtle in their messages and the way they create music. And I think D'Angelo is just a part of that. You know, he will always have to say something when he needs to say something, but then, you know, he'll just talk about, well, I was going to say simple things like love, but, you know, love doesn't always be, love's not always simple, but, no. You know, it can be a lot more simple than the political climate that we live in. You know, I think he's just great at having that balance of making you think and making you not have to think too much or overthink.
The period after the release of D'Angelo's huge second album, Voodoo, was a turbulent one. The constant expectations from his fans and the public had skewed in a direction quite opposed to the music he cared so much about, leading him into a dark and difficult time. It was several years before he was ready to be creative again. In the middle of that difficult time, D'Angelo also had a major falling out with his dear friend and close collaborator, Questlove. People in their circles have referred to it, but not too much detail was given about what happened. Howe says the catalyst might have been something that happened on Triple J in 2007.
Questlove was on the Triple J Hip Hop Show when Maya Jupiter was hosting, and Questlove said, "Oh, they were talking about working with D'Angelo," and then Questlove played a song on the Triple J Hip Hop Show. And it was Real Love, which is on the Black Messiah album. Mm. But it was before it came out, and I was reading Questlove, and he was saying, like, "Oh, I was on Australian radio," and, you know, I just thought no one would ever know that I was playing the song.
Yeah.
But he played it, someone recorded it, and then it just went out everywhere. And apparently D'Angelo was just livid, as he would be. You know, like, you're playing an unreleased song on radio. And I think you can find it on YouTube. Like, the song plays and you can hear Questlove saying over the top, like, "This is an exclusive D'Angelo. You didn't hear it from me." You know? Triple J radio. Yeah.
You're kidding. I didn't know that story, Hal.
Yeah.
I guess that just goes to show how close Questlove and D'Angelo were at the time, that he could feel so casual and cool about dropping an unreleased track on an Australian national radio show 7 years before the album would eventually come out. Thankfully, the pair have since patched things up between them. The song leak was just one of a number of issues D'Angelo went through in the 14 years between Voodoo and his next album. It was a troubling time that included substance abuse and a terrible car crash, along with his own self-doubts and obsessive perfectionism as a recording artist who likes to do things the old-school way, to tape and using his first takes. Hal Latakefu tells us more about the long wait between Voodoo and his celebrated third album, Black Messiah.
I think it was more in the later years of that period we would start to understand why. Because I think, you know, after that you think, "Oh, Voodoo's like the best album in the world." And, you know, videos would come out and obviously he would tour and then would just not see him for ages, and you just think, you know, because social media again wasn't that big then too, so you know, you'd only see bits and pieces of you know, his whereabouts here and there, and then you'd see like a mugshot and you're like, "Oh no," like, you know, I think he gained a lot of weight, maybe that's through depression, you know, through the sexualization of him and his music. And because he did also, I read that he also was, you know, part of a strict religious household, so there was a lot of conflicting factors, you know, making, I think they call it non-secular music, where it's, you know, like that's the devil's music, you know? Yeah. And I think there was a lot of conflict early as well, you know? And then to become a sex symbol and making this kind of music and, yeah, you know, I'm sure that would have played in his mind and his heart and his soul a lot. And, you know, you would see all these stories of him going through a lot of these things and you felt for him because, you know, he was the reason why a lot of other artists existed because of his influence and because of his music. But, you know, once you start, then we started seeing glimpses of him performing and talks of a new album and talks of new songs, and it just gave you hope. And, you know, he came through with Black Messiah.
Black Messiah was a record with a strong social and political consciousness. The title is a reflection on finding salvation, not just in one person, but in the many individuals across many communities who fought for change. It was one of the most highly anticipated albums of 2014 and landed a Grammy for Best R&B Album. From kickstarting a musical movement in the 90s to propelling R&B music forward, Howe says D'Angelo's legacy goes far beyond the trappings of fame and success.
I think cultural impact is what he'll have every time he releases. And for me, cultural impact is far more important than any kind of accolades or sales or charts or streaming view numbers. And he's just one of those artists that will be making music till, you know, till he, you know, passes away. And he makes that type of music that he can make a Brown Sugar when he's 80. You know, he's just one of those artists, and whether he's the most popular or not, that's irrelevant.
There have been many ups and downs across D'Angelo's career as he walked the line between musical visionary and sex symbol, an image he became very uncomfortable with. And although his musical output has been sporadic, the time between albums has been quickly forgiven with the calibre of work he's produced. The J-Files is a Double J podcast. Make sure you like, follow and share. Our producer is Gab Burke. Theme music is by Art vs. Science. You can check out Double J anytime on the Triple J app or at doublej.net.au. I'm Kaz Tran. Thanks for listening.